Welcome to the milk bar. 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 Welcome to the milk bar.
Welcome along. It is episode 154 of the Milk Bar. Jason and Zoe here. How are you this week, young lady?
I'm fine. I'm loving the fantastic weather.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Yes. I was away on holiday last week.
I know, and you had a nice time, I hear.
I had a lovely time. In fact, you know the stick of rock you gave me?
Yeah.
I took that on holiday with me to the seaside.
Why?
Because it happened to be in my bag at the time.
Okay.
But
Did you eat it?
I ate it on the seafront in Seaton in Devon, even though it was Welsh. So they're probably all made in the same place anyway, isn't it, to be fair?
But there we go. So. Did you bring me any rock back? No, I didn't. Been on holiday for a week?
I bought no presents at all. And the stick of rock was any exchange for your Easter egg anyway, so there we go. Right, what's coming up on today's programme then, Zoe?
Ooh, well, we are going to be having music from The Grade.
Yes, we've heard from them a while ago. They have a brand new EP out, and Elle Blower is joining us again, Elliot on the phone. And this is the one who you said had got nice arms.
Now, he was
hoping to come in to show you his arms.
Was he the drummer?
He's the drummer, yeah.
Because that's why I said he had nice arms, because he's exercised them.
Yeah. But he couldn't make it. He was expecting to be for you to turn up and you to look.
I've got my best trousers on as well today.
Yeah, they fit and everything though. That's really good. So we'll be hearing from them a bit later on. Also, we'll be talking music when Mike Ferran from The Deviants joins us. We're having a chat with him about their forthcoming gig at the Robin 2. Also in the studio, two real live guests. First of all, Joe Hancock. Hello, sir.
Hello there.
We'll be talking to you about your theatre group.
Yes, you will.
Also, Monroe Jack is with us. And we'll have a little natter with you first, if that's okay, sir.
Yes, absolutely. Nice to be here, by the way, Jason.
Good to have you with us. Your history in radio goes back to what? The early 70s? Was you were there when Beacon went on air?
When Beacon first opened, yes, in 1976, yep. 12th of April.
I mean, was that your first radio station at the time, or had you experience of such things before?
It was the first station I'd ever worked on, apart from an inland pirate in Birmingham.
Which you don't
have to tell you about.
No. Naughty.
Were you called Monroe Jack on there as well, or did you have a different
name? No, I had
You have to have a different name in those days, didn't you?
Yeah, but it was good fun, but ill-advised, really. The chap who ran it did get prosecuted, and I managed to keep out of it.
Did you ever get raided?
You might edit that out if you want, but it's such a long time ago. But otherwise, no, I'd done discos a lot, and I made up a tape and sent it into Beacon Broadcasting Limited.
Mm-hmm. On 267 Tenmore Road, Wolverhampton?
Yeah, well, they were in the Express and Star building at the time.
Uh-huh. Hadn't even got the offices yet.
No, I was asked in, and I did another tape, I think. And then after a while, when we got near the launch date, I did some dry runs, which is like, you know, doing a program without actually being broadcast. Probably just a couple of hours, I think. And then on the first Sunday night, I was on my own in the studio.
Left to it, and probably literally tens of thousands of people listening in, I'm guessing.
We hope so, yes.
It was a whole new thing, wasn't it? Because you were probably, was it the seventh independent local radio station to go on air, something like that? There weren't that many around.
No, it was the 19th.
19th, was it, right?
Yeah, but it was the end of that particular batch, and there were no more for quite a few years.
Mm-hmm.
It was very novel because the IBA, who policed the independent stations, wanted it to be a bit different to how the others had been, in that there was an overlap in the reception area with BRMB in Birmingham, and they wanted it to be a bit challenging, and it certainly turned out to be, because the two people who set the station up, Jay Oliver and Alan McKenzie, were really steeped in American radio. Jay was from Miami, and Alan, he was lived in Canada for a long time. Mm-hmm. So they knew what commercial radio should really be like.
And to make it listenable as well.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, something it doesn't seem to be quite so anymore.
Oh, I did say I find it quite sad that it's changed its name, to be fair. Is that something you...
I wasn't thinking specifically of Beacon. I think generally across the board, radio's not about personality in the same way as it was back when you were related. Pretty much used to get away, I suppose, with an awful lot of fun.
How do you feel about the change of name, that you were there at the birth of Beacon and now it's...
I think it's sad, really.
Mm. Yeah?
But I can understand exactly why they're doing it.
Right.
Or why they've done it. I mean, there are so many more stations now.
Yeah.
You know, when you compare back in 1976, and the audience is dropping somewhat because people have got so many different sources of music.
Mm-hmm.
and they can, you know, choose whatever they want themselves without turning
the
radio on.
You've got to have a reason, though, because you've got to sit through the advert, so there's got to be something to listen to. And for me, back when I was listening to Beacon, what would have been in the early 80s, there was something different. There were people listening to you. Mick Wright was there with you at the start, and I used to love listening to him in the afternoon when the teachers were on strike. And to listen to someone like Pete Wagstaff or Gordon Astley on Breakfast, who were... I mean, you were there when the Poison Dwarf was on the station.
I was, yes, with Phil Bryce. Kids stuff, yeah.
It did seem in those days, because I remember listening to radio in the 80s, but I used to be more BBC, like Radio 1. And there wasn't the advert thing so much, was there, and there was a lot more fun going on in the studio. Everybody seemed to get on and have a laugh. And I don't know, now you have to have things set up so precisely, and you've only got like a minute and a half or whatever for a link as a maximum, and it seems a shame. And I remember like all the road shows that they used to do and outside broadcasts, getting guests in, even live guests aren't that common anymore, are they? No,
no, probably. I mean, those were the days of sort of personality DJs, although I think everybody who was at Beacon were sort of genuine people, they were chosen for that reason. You know, no one was pretending to be Tony Blackburn or whatever. Because, you see, when Beacon started, we saw the competition as being Radio 1. We didn't think of BRMB as being a competitor, because it wasn't doing anything really very much that we were doing. You know, it sounded a bit like the BBC in those days with ad breaks, whereas ours was much more punchy and sharp and tight and American influenced, and with a playlist which was unlike Radio 1's. It was there was no bubblegum or, you know, blatant sort of pop. It was sort of a mixture of, if you can imagine, somewhere halfway between Top of the Pops and the Earl Grey Whistle Test, you know, with a sort of a West Coast influence, the Eagles and Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young and people like that.
But did you enjoy listening to that music yourself? Were you using that when you were out DJing as well? Or?
A little bit, not so much, because, you know, not all of that was particularly good to dance to, so it was a different type of audience. But it was great for people living around here, you know, to suddenly have a different sounding radio station. You know, before you had Radio 1 and BRMB and Luxembourg at Night. And I don't think there would be many others unless you were pulling in a station from
something strange bouncing off the ionosphere out there.
Yes.
but people probably listened to less cassette tapes in the car in those days, even though home taping was killing music in the 70s. And it was a very different attitude to music. You say now you stick your iPod in the car, you don't have to listen to broadcast media. It's almost clinical, isn't it, very often, music these days?
Yeah, it is an interesting point, that, because with the radio stations then, I mean, and cassettes were quite new. Everybody taped the top 40 on a Sunday, didn't they? And you could then listen to your favourites in that way. Otherwise, to hear the latest music all day, it was the radio. And, you know, Beacon filled that gap, I think, here particularly. We forget, actually, what an impact it made. We got 33% of the total listening audience in the official area.
And there must have been 10 radio stations they could have got. So it was a really good reaction, a good uptake. But it was like being part of the community as well. What shows were you doing at the time?
I used to do every Sunday night, which was a sort of easy listening thing, which wasn't what I was used to when I, you know, from the past and from doing discos and things. But I got into the swing of it, and it was really interesting, because I had completely free choice. So I would play a little bit of classical music or a little bit of jazz or blues or, you know, all sorts of things, which just seemed suitable for a Sunday night.
Playlist.
Yeah. And then I used to sit in for Mick Wright a lot for his shows when he was on holiday or playing darts for the Beacon Darts team and that sort of thing.
But priorities were darts first, radio show second.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And I sat in for a lot of people. I think I covered all times of the day except the breakfast show.
Who was doing breakfast back then? Was it Poison Dwarf?
He was doing weekends.
Mike
Baker was doing the breakfast show.
Because he launched a station, didn't he? The only reason I remember the Poison Dwarf was because this would have been shortly after the launch. I was in infant school, and the Beacon Roadshow came along. I've got a reasonably sketchy picture of this. There was a competition whereby you had to wear masks, and the Poison Dwarf was judging the mask competition as part of this OB, and I walked in the wrong direction at some point and got laughed at by a lot of people, and he took the mickey out of me. Scarred for life, I would say.
Ended up going there to work for a while, Jason.
Well, I did, none of it paid, I'll admit. I did kid stuff and co-hosted that for... between 15 and 16, 18 months. And it was still, I'd have thought, some of the same sort of feel then. Yes, it was more formulaic in the music output. There were four songs that were on heavy rotation, and one of those four songs would start the hour every hour. But it was still much more of a local feel than radio has these days, even though radio probably tries to appear to be more local than ever before.
Yeah.
I presume there was no pre-records or anything, was there? It was just if the radio was on, there would be a presenter in the studio.
There was no cheating at night, was there, back in the day? It was real. If you were on air,
there were real people
it was
there
real
to
people.
Answer the phone.
It was all live.
Yeah.
I think the only things that came in on tape were Kenny Everett on a Saturday lunchtime. I really can't think of anybody who taped any programmes, no, all live.
So that's what I think is missing at the minute, because pre-records just aren't the same, are they?
No. But, you know, Christmas Day and everything, you know, we were always there.
Normally giving batteries away, as I recall from when I was a kid. people would turn up to get... the toy didn't work. Go to Beacon, get some free batteries.
There was that sort of thing, wasn't there? Yeah. And come to a reception and buy your... or pick up car stickers and buy your Beacon T-shirt and all that kind of thing. There was a Christmas LP once. I don't know if you've ever
really?
Come
No, I've never
it.
Seen...
Yes.
No, I wasn't aware of that one. Did you perform?
Or was it, no, it wasn't. The staff didn't do it, no. It was sort of bought in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you'd go to reception and pay your 12 and 6 or whatever it was and get your Beacon.
It was all
Christmas.
Metric, come on. It was all all modern money and none of the proper stuff from days of old.
Good fun there. Mm-hmm. You see, I was talking about Jay Oliver and Alan McKenzie with their American influence in the music, but also the jingles.
They were all bought from the States, were they?
Not originally, because I know you've played some here, haven't you, before on Match Day?
On Match Day, when Beacon, we used to be involved with Beacon, that's how I ended up here at Molyneux in the first place, and we used to play Serving the Universe, and that was actually an American jingle, I think, from that particular package.
No, what happened was the IBA, who I was telling you about before, wouldn't let independent stations use American jingles until the early 80s, I think,
mm-hmm.
maybe slightly earlier than that. So, whereas Joe Oliver wanted to use jingles from a company called PAMS, and there was another one called JAMS in Dallas, he wasn't allowed to. So what he did was he had a sample tape of sample jingles, which they sent out to stations, and he took that down to London and had the soundtracks copied as best he could. So he had the music beds copied and then had the jingles re-sung with British singers, and so the first package evolved in that way. So they sounded American, but they were made over here because the IBA insisted.
Got round the rules that way.
Yeah, well, Radio 1, for instance, could buy their jingles from anybody they wanted, and so they bought theirs straight from America and didn't have all that hoo-ha.
No messing about at all.
But it didn't stop us, you know, mm-hmm. it still contributed to a good sound.
And how long were you there?
I was there for nearly 3 years,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And a complete change of job since then, because I know at the moment you're working in interior design,
yeah,
but what happened? Did you...
Why did I leave?
Mm.
I was offered just before it went 24 hours, I was offered the late night show. It would have been 3 or 4 nights. And I was already beginning to think that this was a bit of an insecure business. Because people were getting dismissed and left under sort of mysterious circumstances quite often.
What, never to be seen again?
Well, they reappeared later. I think Mike Baker was sacked 3 times. But
kept coming back, though.
He tells that story, so he wouldn't mind me repeating it. But I did sort of have to think, is this really what I want to do forever? And I thought, well, no, I'll have a little break from it. So I think I was the only one who actually did resign, but I never went back to it. And I wish I had, really.
Well, it's never too late, is it?
No, not in this day and age. I mean, no. this the smooth radio. I think those tones would work particularly well on there.
And you have a lovely radio voice smooth radio. As well.
Kind of you.
So we'll put a demo tape together for you and send them in off, okay?
Yeah.
That'll do the job. Well, thank you for joining us. Do stay with us.
I will.
We will be having a little chat with you as we make our way through the rest of the show. As we're talking music from the 60s into the 70s, so there'll be some quiz questions coming your way later, because you were there and I was only born in 72, so I haven't got a clue. Okay? That's on the way. But first of all, we will take some music. Our first track from the band The Grade. This is If You Feel Love. Joins us on the phone. You are the drummer in the band. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, thanks for you, mate.
Oh, I know. It's been a while since we last had a chat, isn't it?
there have been a good year or so now.
You
have
it's never been a year.
It's been a year.
Gosh.
Must have been.
But this is when you came back after being ill last year, probably, though, isn't it?
Oh, so, yes.
What's been going on with the band then? Because you have that brand new EP, which you've just heard the title track from.
We've been really, really busy with the new EP. We're just getting it out, really. We had our EP launch last Friday in Cannock at the Fern and Fallow. We've been recording at Univibe Audio in Birmingham, which the producers there really, really bang on, really. They've got us a really good sound out of it, really. So we've just been really, really busy with it, really.
Any touring at all?
We've just finished our last gig. The EP launch was our last gig for a good 3 or 4 months now. Our singer Jack is going to America for 3 months.
So that limits things a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, just a little, yeah. The amount of gigs we've had to turn down is... gotta be in the double figures now.
Is that a holiday, or are you just trying to escape to find somebody else to work with?
He's going to Camp America to teach music to kids.
And hopefully sell a few CDs whilst he's over there as well.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. Do a bit of band promotion.
How did this EP come about? Do you feel it's got the same sort of sound to the last one, or is it, or have you experimented a little more this time around?
We have experimented quite a bit with it, really. Especially, like, the last track, we've been doing that for a good year or so now. Like, I feel that they're quite different to the rest, to our previous EP, even. We've tried to stick to a more what we want to do, but trying to make it so people enjoy it a little bit more. If you get me.
Well, we will do a comparison, because the last tune you'll hear from you today will be Keep Yourself in Line from the original EP.
Yeah.
Although two more to come from this new one. Give us all the details on where people can get hold of this if they do wish to purchase a copy.
Yep, it's currently available to listen to on our Facebook at the moment, facebook.com/LeGrade. Very soon be available on iTunes, Spotify, and all them sites. Like,
is it going to be one of those free ones that people can download, or are you charging?
We did that with our last one, and... We've got quite a few likes off in, like, so.
And you'll be making some money back this time around, I think.
We felt that this time, like, because we were having to chip in quite a lot towards, like, the new EP and stuff. We need to get at least a little bit back, like, off it.
So give us a bit of a feel for the other tunes that we're taking, because the next one's Struck by Lightning. Hopefully not something from personal experience, this title.
Of course, our singer Jack writes all the songs. It was a bit of a bugger to record this one, actually, because... There was three different tempos in it. There was like section A, section B, and section C.
Yeah.
And they all had different tempos, which we didn't realise until we actually went to record it. So when we actually recorded, we were a bit dumbstruck then. But it turned out pretty well, actually. It was much harder to record than we thought. We thought it would be quite straightforward, because it's got like a bit of a push and a pull to it, which we don't tend to do, really. But it turned out really well, actually. And everyone seems to like it, especially with like the mad ending on it.
I bet it's about a girl as well, isn't it?
I don't know. I sing the rest of the songs. But,
and you don't listen to the words, do you? You just sit there and play drums when you're expected to.
I have to concentrate on the drumming, don't I?
And that's why you're complaining about it having three different tempos as well, because that was more extra effort for you to be thrown in. Okay, well, we'll take a listen to that in a moment or two. But also, Dance is on the way. Now, you say that one's been doing the rounds for about 12 months now. And I take it this is on the EP due to popular demand, then?
Yeah, as I say, we've been doing it for quite a while. We've got a few live versions there, but we've done quite a lot of different versions of it, really. When we first started doing it about 12 months ago, it was quite a lot different. There's actually a live version of on our website from about six or eight months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we listened to it today, actually, and we thought, this is really, really different to what we actually do now. I mean, it's not the best quality, like, but we listened to it and we're like, this has changed so much.
Hmm.
But for the good, of course, like.
Yeah, development of a song. That's what playing live does, doesn't it, really? It changes your music around.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you get to see what people like then, don't you? And you change it for the better then.
Mm-hmm. Well, give us the web address one more time before we hear Struck by Lightning.
That's thegrade.co.uk.
Pop along that, get your links to the Facebook pages. And do you have a Twitter feed yet?
Yeah, we have thegrade.uk. That's just thegrade.uk.
And you can follow him on Twitter as well, and find out about forthcoming gigs once you've got your lead singer back from the US.
Yep. Yeah, we've also got our video for. We've just been recording, filming the video for Dance actually this week in Kidderminster through Kidderminster College at Maz Records. They've been helping us quite a lot with the getting the EP out there. So they like get us like a bit of recording time and rehearsal times and stuff. Like we get, it's like a government-run scheme, so they've helped quite a considerable amount, really.
Well, we look forward to seeing that one
big
online.
Thank you to them, really, yeah.
Have you got your own YouTube channel for that sort of thing? Or?
Yeah, The Gride 2011. The video will be up there in mid to late next month. There's also a preview of the EP as well on there for people who just want to have a quick listen before, in case they want to buy it later on.
The preview is what counts. Get them hooked, and we're enjoying listening to the music today. El, thanks for joining us. We shall listen out for the tempo changes on this one and how much you suffered, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, this is The Gride and Struck by Lightning. Ta-ra for now.
Okay, bye. Bye.
Struck by lightning on the side of my face. When you look at me with those evil eyes, you glare them at me like I was a disgrace. Now I feel the pain subside. It's not the same when I think you're looking at me. It's all about you and you.
Great, Struck by Lightning. Zoe, music once more, and we go to the phones, don't we?
We do indeed.
And joining us, we have Mick Farren from The Deviants. Hello, sir.
Hello there.
Now, you are appearing at the Robin 2 in Bilston, a fantastic venue, on Wednesday the 6th of June.
Wednesday the 6th of June, D-Day, yeah.
And it's going to be quite an exciting night, isn't it? Because you've got the support down there to get things going for you on the evening, but I'm sure you're going to come down there and absolutely rock the place to bits.
Well, I hope we will. I really hope we will. I mean, we've already seen The Ancient, but
you're going to give it a go
well,
anyway.
And we still do.
God, there are plenty of rockers from the 60s still doing their stuff.
Damn right.
And for damn good reason, too. So give us a bit of the history on The Deviants, because you've been very influential with the sound that you've brought to a number of bands over the years, but you've sort of stopped and started when you felt like it, haven't you, really?
It's been a bit of a floating crap game, yeah. I mean, we were the guys that went to see The Who down the Marquee and thought, we could do that. No, we can't. Yes, we can. And bit by bit, you know, basically just got the gear together, got very large amplifiers, didn't know what we were doing, started doing it. People told us to go away. We refused to go away, and everything sort of seemed to work out. We weren't terribly popular with the, the most kind of passive flower power hippies, but...
But you were still psychedelic, though, weren't you?
We were kind of psychedelic. As much as, the Velvet Underground was psychedelic, or the Stooges were psychedelic, or the MC5 was psychedelic. I mean, we were all part of... We were part of the, the sort of psychedelic underground, rather nasty left. I mean, we had... We had a bit more of a political consciousness. We had a bit more of a bad attitude, and really didn't think the whole the world was going to be changed by beads and holding up two fingers and a peace sign. It might require a bit more attack. And a lot of what we were doing then was 10 years later was vindicated by the Pistols and the Clash, and everything went merrily on its way.
But so your sounds had morphed into some of the punk that became very popular in the '70s.
To tell the truth, our sound was very much like the punk of the '70s. Mm-hmm. Back in 68, 69, it was the same thing, except, we sort of took different drugs and we played for a lot longer. I mean, with a Clash would do something for 2.5-3 minutes, man, we learned from the Velvet Underground, Sister Ray, you could play that for 20 minutes and, the speed freaks in the audience would go completely crazy. But otherwise, it was pretty much the same. All that really changed was the haircuts,
And maybe some of the body jewellery that went along with it.
Yeah, we didn't have as many tattoos.
So how does the lineup compare now to back in the day?
Well, you've got three originals, me, Russell the drummer, Sandy the bass player. We got a comparative newcomer, Andy Cahoon, playing guitar, because we can't get Larry Wallace out of his tortures of solitude. But, I mean, Andy's only been with the band for, 35 years, so he's a comparative junior.
And a newcomer, yeah.
And we've also got the great Jackie Windmill from Nick Turner's Space Ritual, adding percussion and some singing and all kinds of things. And that's basically it.
And obviously your music's out there. I think between all of you, is it something like more than 20 CDs that you've published in various guises over the years, whether it be this or the Pink Fairies, that sort of thing? Is that music all still out there and selling these days in the volume you'd like it to?
I'd like more of it to be out there. Mm-hmm. Some of it's kind of hard to get. It's there.
But do you still have master tapes you could maybe... mixed down for MP3 to flood on iTunes, that
there's
sort of thing.
There's all kinds of things that could be. I mean, we're working on stuff. Basically, people come to you and say, oh, we want to do this. And then you kind of go all through the legal ramifications and things come out. They come out as MP3s, they come out on CDs, they come out in Japan. I mean, it's a cycle. It comes and goes. I mean, I'm far more interested. We're sort of on an in and out of the studio at the moment doing some things. I'm interested in just pushing forward and doing more stuff.
Mm. As I say, is it going to be a lot?
Taking more chances, being weirder, just going for it. I mean, we've come this far. There's really, we've come so far, there's nothing to fear. I mean, we can really get crazy. Mm.
So is there going to be a lot of new stuff then, rather than replaying some old stuff?
Mm-hmm. A balance. There'll be some new stuff. Mm-hmm. There'll be some old stuff, and hopefully the people who come down and see us, I think people who come down and see us will have known us for years, and I just hope they keep an open mind. I mean, there'll be old favourites and there'll also be new things, and I think when we do the new stuff, it'll also, everyone will be able to tell where it's coming from, and the sort of progress of our evolution that's created, new music. It's the same kind of thing. There are really no huge radical changes.
There's no synth pop involved.
We haven't suddenly gone prog on everybody. Yeah, but, at my age, I feel a bit stupid standing up on a stage, sort of singing about teenage sexual tension because it's not part of my life anymore, unfortunately, But
you remember it well.
right, you know.
Actually, I think it's fairly well documented as well. There's bound to be a book out there detailing all of your teenage sexual tension at some point.
But yeah, I mean, as long as, you know, all I'm hoping is that, you know, Lemmy doesn't drop dead, because then we're all in trouble, you know. But as long as he keeps going, the rest of us will keep going too, you know. And we'll keep hammering it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure it's going to be an absolutely fantastic gig. It's all taking place, as we say, at the Robin 2 in Bilston, Wednesday the 6th of June. Tickets are £12.50 in advance or £13.50 on the door, with the doors opening at 7.30. The box office number 01902 401 211, or of course you can book online as well at therobin.co.uk. And have you got your own website, and did you follow that sort of thing to share your pictures of the band and maybe some of the memories?
I kind of blog almost every day on doc4d at blogspot.com, and there are links there to, there's a Facebook page on the Deviants, and there's a Facebook page on me, Mick Farren. It's between that, you've pretty much got everything covered, and an awful lot of other nonsense as well.
some of the madness and the psychedelia.
Yeah, I think some Christians stuck up a content warning on my blog, but don't let that deter you.
That's often an advertising feature, isn't it? That's what will send more people your way.
Parental guidance required.
I'm sure that there's some of your audience who would who are the parents these days and are quite happy sharing your work with their kids, to be honest. But there we go. Mick, thank you for joining us. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, you're very welcome, man.
Have an absolutely brilliant gig, and I'm saying it should be an absolutely fantastic one down there on Wednesday the 6th at the Robin. Cheers. Ta-ra for now.
Thanks.
Hey, take care now.
Bye.
I think it's time for some more music now, Jason. It is The Grave and Dance.
third track from their brand new EP, The Grade, with Dance from If You Fell In Love. Right, Zoe.
Yes?
There's a gentleman sat directly behind you.
There is, and he hasn't got any shoes on.
Okay.
I don't know. I know.
Joseph, why haven't you got your shoes on?
I'm worried that's my defining feature, you know.
You often wander around without shoes.
Well, they keep falling off and it's so hot.
It is a bit warm.
I have nothing else. Mm-hmm. So yes, I kind of just get bored of them falling off the whole time. I just decide not to wear them.
And our carpet's clean as well, isn't it?
It's not too bad in here. This, just around your chair's got a bit of a mess because someone likes to pine a match down and drop something on one of the tiles down there. But other than that, the carpet's good.
I'm judging you by the feel of your carpet, though. That's kind of how I judge people at the moment, just walking around in barefoot.
Okay, you're wearing shorts as well, which is a danger with Zoe about too, so do be careful.
Right.
She has been known to pounce.
I see. Well, luckily there is quite a big fence in between the two of us.
Okay, we'll be okay. Fingers crossed. So, Joe, back to the plot and what's going on just at the moment, because you are currently preparing yourself for the follow-up to The Death of Georgia B, which we spoke to you about, must be 12 months ago now?
Just over, I think, yeah. Georgia B was last March. Mm-hmm. So The Death of Georgia B was a show that I created last year in Wolverhampton with my theatre company. We create non-traditional theatre where audiences don't sit and become passive and watch a play, but interact and get fully involved within it. And with the case of The Death of Georgia B, they walk around the entire city of Wolverhampton trying to figure out the hunt for a killer.
I was there.
Yes,
and
you were.
It was very good. I really enjoyed it. It was well acted. It was quite surreal seeing you in character.
Thank
you. And then having to talk to you in character. That was a bit peculiar because, obviously, to me, you're Joe and not the bloke who was in the production. So, very well acted. You did particularly well.
Thank you.
And that, I was very impressed with it. It's quite nice because we got to run round the art gallery in Wolverhampton when there was no one else there as well. Things
yes,
like that.
You did.
Being
you got
naughty.
To run round the art gallery and down underneath tunnels and things like that.
I think we failed and missed some of the tunnels, to
did
be honest.
You?
We did still guess who'd done it, though. Well, which was good.
Lots of people didn't, so that's very good.
I got the answer right. I'm quite proud of
that. That sounds interesting.
But there we are. But this is something slightly different, but still a lot more interactive than your usual theatre production.
Yeah, that's right. It's a totally new show. It's a totally separate show, so it's not a follow-up or a sequel to The Death of Georgia B. It's totally new, and it's called Situation. And unlike The Death of Georgia B, it's not set in different venues around Wolverhampton. This one is only set in the Arena Theatre, but it is set in an Arena Theatre that has been abandoned for years. Mm. So our task as a theatre company is how to make this theatre that, at the moment, is a fully working theatre, look totally...
And very nice it is, too, at the moment.
Oh, lovely. Far too nice,
without
actually.
Without trashing it, of course.
Yeah. And obviously, by the end of the show, at the very end, once we're all done with the show, and we have to get out and make it look like it is.
Put
today.
It back together.
Beforehand.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how much are you going to be allowed to get away with as far as your set dressing for the theatre itself?
Well, they've been amazing. The Arena Theatre have been absolutely fantastic. And the director, Kevin, has said... as far as he is concerned, we start creating our world in the space on the 9th. We open on the 12th. So we have 3 days to totally transform it and board up windows and cardboard over floors and prop up old mattresses that people are sleeping in and smash lights and things like that. And his only condition is that on the day of the last show, which is the 17th, the next day on the 18th, it has to look like it looked on the 9th. So that's all he cares about. As long as it looks like it did before we get in, he's fine. But in the intermittent period, all bets are off, really. So as long as we aren't setting anything on fire or flood damaging.
Yeah, no actual fixture and fitting damage, but you could take something out for safekeeping, for example.
You can.
Yes.
You can. There are ways around it. We really are. We have a bit more time and a bit more money, a bit of a bigger budget and a bigger cast than we did for The Death of Georgia B. So it's really a more ambitious show. Mm-hmm. So it really allows us to kind of really realise what we imagined the show to be like. So the show is basically set in a world where art has been outlawed. It is set in a non-specific world and a non-specific year from now where art has become illegal. And any kind of performance or books or art or museums or cinema are all outlawed. And what happens is art is then forced underground. So the old theatre is boarded up and totally abandoned and overtaken. And it is up to the audience to go into this space and investigate and see what happens.
See, I already wanted to come and see this anyway. You've just sold it to me even more now.
Are you excited?
I just said, but knowing the quality of what you're going to get, it's going to be well worth going along to. So how is this going to work as far as audience goes? Because I know last time There must have been about, 60 or 80 people in a group, but there were lots of people moving around at different times. So how does it actually work as far as the audience goes? What can you cope with?
The thing about these kind of shows, what we really like is the less people in there, the better.
Right.
Which makes no business sense.
None.
So what we found...
How do Last Fancies ever make any money then?
Well, generous donations from the Arts Council. Uh-huh. That's how. But joking aside, the kind of theatre we like to create should feel personal and intimate. And it's very much the journey that you, as an audience, go on, as opposed to sitting down and experiencing it with everyone else. It's about the journey you want to take. So when you're walking around the theatre, it's very much up to you what you want to do. You can go into the dressing rooms, the whole. It's not just the main space of a theatre that we are using. It's the whole of the arena. So all of the dressing rooms are transformed. The box office is transformed. The foyer becomes a performance space. And it's all made to look as though it's been abandoned. So once you get into that space, it is up to you where you go. And obviously, it is then better if you're not bumping into audience members the whole time who kind of ruin your experience. Equally, however, we have to try and make some money back. So the way we're getting around that is we're doing two performances a night minimum. So we open on Tuesday the 12th, which is our preview. So there are £5 tickets available for that. And we are doing two shows a night with a capacity of only 30, which is still really small. And then on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, we're doing three a night. So that's a little bit more. But still, it's a balance between trying to make sure the experience isn't ruined by having lots of audience in there and trying to get as many people in as we can. The Death of Georgia Beast sold out really quickly and we had to add an extra show. Mm-hmm. So we've tried to make sure that enough people can kind of come and see this.
I suppose you want it to be, if it was like a real theatre that had been abandoned, it would be quiet and it'd be there wouldn't be many people there because they'd be scared to go there. So I suppose that's the sort of thing you want to reenact, isn't it?
Absolutely. And if you cram it full of 500 audience members, this beautiful, abandoned, mysterious space that we have spent months creating won't be that mysterious.
Maybe like a shopping centre on a Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely.
So you've got these people. They come along. There's 30 of them. Mm-hmm. They're all going to arrive pretty much the same time.
Yeah.
But then they disperse around the theatre.
That's a very good question. It's something we're really working on at the moment, is how you get the audience in. Like you say, we don't just want 30 people to kind of arrive in the door and just all stand in one place. You kind of want to dot them around the space. So maybe you get split up. Maybe you don't get in together. Maybe we tier the audience as they go through. We're not going to tell you how.
Keep the front doors locked and just let them in bit by bit.
But we have ways of getting you in the way we want you to be. My favourite thing about the kind of work that we do is that it's all about audience manipulation. So you might feel like you are allowed to go wherever you want to, but we know where we want you to go. Mm. And it's about making sure the audience is in the right place at the right time.
But what frame of mind, though, is the audience going to have for when they arrive? What are they... What can they expect to do whilst they're there?
Well, it's not a ghost train. It's not a theme park ride. So if you are of a nervous disposition, then that's fine. It's not something we're not going to jump out on you from behind the curtain. But equally,
so Zoe was looking forward to that.
If your idea of the perfect night out is sitting down, that isn't it either. Mm. It's a kind of a balance between an art installation that you get to wander around and explore, but it is interactive. You can go through all of the doors and you can speak to everyone, and it's all about what you try and take out of the show.
Mm-hmm. So there'll be interaction, but the chance to stand back if, say, one of a group wanted to just watch what else happens, they'll be safe enough.
Yeah, that's the way we kind of try and model it. The more you look into it, the more you get. But you can walk around and not talk to anyone or not touch anything and just wander at your own pace and stay as far out as you want. You can go into, we have bars in this show. It's the first time we're making sort of cabaret bars and stuff like that, because it's an old theatre that's been abandoned. You could just sit in one place and let people come to you, and they will. So you can be a passive audience member, but the more you look, the more you find.
Mm. And what is the expectation for you to do in this? Because obviously the Death of Georgia Bee, the way that panned out, you were a member of a police investigation team.
Yes.
You had to work out who'd committed the murder, and there was a bit of acting that followed through afterwards. So it was all-encompassing. You were surrounded by the whole thing, and you really did feel part of it. And you were convinced that you were in uniform plotting the beat at some point.
Yes.
It was that good.
Amazing. It was amazing the reaction we had with the Death of Georgia Bee, because we were... I've been a drama student almost all of my life, so I would love something like that, and I always find myself getting into role as best as I can. And we were kind of worried that you know, people who maybe were less interested in stuff like that wouldn't enjoy it, wouldn't interact. And what we found was quite the opposite. People just get right into the role. We had half of the installation that we made in it and put into the space was ignored because people were so excited about trying to find out who this killer was. That was all they were doing, was running around. With Situation, it is slightly different. It's not a murder mystery. It is, there are mysterious elements to it, and it is a sort of a thriller, but there isn't a killer for you to find. There isn't a body that you have to discover. It's not a murder mystery. And the role of the audience is slightly less clear. With The Death of Georgia B, straight away the audience knew they were detectives. Whereas with this, my favourite thing about Situation is we don't tell the audience who they are. Mm. When you go into the space, you're faced with this empty, abandoned theatre and you have to figure out what you have to do.
So is there like going to be a start and an end then? Like, you know, like a normal theatre play, you'd expect to see like a storyline, wouldn't you? And
yeah. But there are lots of storylines. So it's a space that we create, and within that, lots of things happen. And it's up to you to find them.
Mm. Even more intriguing. Now, this all comes from the product of your mind, doesn't it?
It does, not just my mind.
But there's a team of you. How many people behind this, then?
Predominantly three. So there's myself, there's my co-director and writer, and there's a designer. And the three of us work together as a devising company. We sit down, myself and my director sit down, and we come up with different ideas, and we basically start with the impossible. We start with what is the craziest thing we could do in a world where anything was possible and money was no object. And then we scale it down and down from there.
Until you hit the budget.
Until we hit a point that is physically feasible.
But I'm sure it'll still be particularly fantastic. It should be an amazing piece of theatre. How many are in the cast altogether?
At the moment, that's difficult to say. We don't want to tell you.
Okay. There are a number of people in the cast. Probably not quite as many as in the audience, but we never know. There could be more.
I was going to say, that to me indicates that you're not going to know who's actually in the
cast.
You
just don't trust him there, do you?
So you could be sitting next to a cast member.
I wouldn't necessarily trust everyone you think was in the audience.
Yeah, it sounds particularly intriguing. It takes place from the 12th through to the 17th of June. Several performances. I would do some quick maths. So hang on, two off there, carry the one. Is that about 12 or 13 performances?
It's 15 performances. 15. So we have a preview night on the Tuesday. So there are £5 tickets available for that because it's a kind of preview. So that night we're all kind of testing ideas. But if you're up for something kind of fresh and raw and cheaper tickets, that's a Tuesday. And then we officially open on the Wednesday. And there are two performances a night until the Saturday and Sunday, and Friday when there are three.
So every performance is going to be totally different, isn't it? So, I don't know, would you go on the very last night so it's all...
Well, I'm not even in the country until the Friday night, I do want to go. And
you are specifically coming back just for this as well, aren't you?
Yeah, well, this is it. It has to be done.
You could come a couple of times. You could come to every totally different night and try and see something different.
Mm-hmm. And maybe explore a bit more of the situation that unfolds before you.
Absolutely. And you got the title of the show in there as well.
I did well at that, didn't I? So where do people get tickets from then?
So tickets are available through the arena, so they can either go to our website, which is www.lastfancies.co.uk, or by calling the arena box office, which is 01902 321 321. And tickets for the previews, as I said, are £5, and the main shows are £8 with £6 concessions.
Get yourself along. I can promise you this, it will be worthwhile going, whichever one of the shows you go to. If you can put yourself in for two, even better. So the Arena Theatre in Wolverhampton, certainly the place to be between the 12th and the 17th of June. And does this mean you're already thinking about the next production from Last Fancies?
Absolutely. We're always trying to think of bigger and better ideas.
Is there anything bigger and better?
I don't know. I'm amazed how they do it. It's like, really good and a particularly fine set of actors they are too. Right, let's take our final tune. This one from The Grade. It's from their EP from last year. You sit back, compare the difference to what you've heard already tonight. This is Keep Yourself in Line.
Age and bored, intimidated by the people in the hood. Gotta see the light, keep your soul alive, keep the positivity alive, 'cause gotta keep yourself in line. Don't be a fool, just be divine. Gotta keep on fire. Do what I desire. Dance around and be a fool and a liar. What I've heard from sound, I want the golden crown. I want a year like 5 years from now. Cause you gotta keep yourself in line. Don't be a fool, just be divine.
And keep yourself in line. Zoe, lovely show as ever.
Of course.
Thank you for your fine contributions, the fact you're wearing something summery.
And my trousers.
And your best trousers. thank you to all of our guests. Obviously, we spoke to Elle and also to Mick on the phone. And here with us in the studio, Monroe, you stayed with us.
Yes, I did.
We didn't throw you out or anything.
And he's still awake, which is good.
It's not quite like radio programmes back in the 70s.
It's just like a radio program.
Almost. only very few records, four of them in the space of just over an hour now, but there we are.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you for coming in. Good to hear you. And thank you for the story. Any other stories you've thought of that you want to share in the last, 45 minutes or so that have suddenly come to mind?
Actually, yes. I was going to mention one thing where Beacon was particularly, it stood out in the radio world, was that at the time, whereas Radio 1 has only had AM medium wave transmissions.
Yep.
We had FM stereo.
Simulcasting.
Yeah, and that was a really big advantage.
Is there a book on the way? Or the book of memory? That would be great. Because you're on Facebook. I'm Facebook friends with you.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see things pop up. And there's a lot of radio history out there which does come along every once in a while. And we all sit back and go, oh, isn't that sweet?
Mm. We need to put it all in one place, especially now they've changed the name because people will be after things
yes.
like that.
There is a website, actually, which is called beacon.memories.co.uk. I think that's what Dave Bell has called it now.
Mm-hmm. But Google it. That'll get you
Google there. It. Just Google Beacon Memories, and there's a very good website there. And a lot of us have contributed things to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back from the beginning up until the name change.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there'll be pictures of you there, Jason.
I'm hoping not. There's this thing called the Beacon Times they put out when I was there, and a newspaper that was put through all the doors of absolutely everybody at my school
with
a picture of me being a presenter. So that was slightly embarrassing as a 15-year-old.
Didn't they think you was cool, though, doing that?
Yeah, I suppose in the bullying someone who might think they're cool kind of a way, but there we go. I suffered for it as a youth. It hasn't caused me any major lasting problems, I'm convinced of it. Well, maybe I'm not, but there we go. Monroe, thank you for joining us. Joe, Joseph, Mr. Hancock, whatever we're calling you.
You can call me whatever you like.
Oi. Thank you again also for joining us. Stop playing with your legs again. It's causing Zoe an issue. She's looking at them.
I am looking at them. I haven't seen them properly yet, though, James.
You go and experiment. You check his legs out. We'll still say goodbye. Breakfast episode 155 next week. And then the big one, 156, when Zoe is arranging several celebrities for the third birthday.
Oh, I could try.
Yeah.
I've got a few in the pipeline, though, Jason.
If I fail, misery is again, as ever. But there we go. Thanks for joining us. Ta-ra for now.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye from the milk bar. 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 Yeah. Goodbye from the milk bar. Yeah.